Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Castor, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you.
Today's special guest is Cameron Gerber. Cameron covers the legislature and business for the News Tribune. Hello, Cameron.
Hi.
So, Cameron, we came in today to talk about, it's been a pretty active week last week in the legislature. Actually, the month of January was quite an active month, and a lot of it was focused on state government pay. So, kind of give us an idea how we got to that spot, why we're talking so much about state government compensation.
There has been high turnover rates among various positions in state government over the past few years. It has been sort of a focus of Governor Mike Parson. He has recommended a couple of cost of living increases in prior budgets. They were around 2-3%, so they're a little bit lower than what we have going on for this session, but it's something that the Office of Administration and different state departments and lawmakers themselves have noticed in the past couple of years. There is a budget bill kind of in the works that would seek to address that.
Okay. Well, and I will say personally, I've been here about a dozen years, and a common theme that's also during that entire time was how poorly state government employees are paid when you compare them to other states. It's mm-hmm. like 50th lowest among states. So a lot of history there on top of then the current issue with just turnover and filling those positions. So you mentioned Governor Parson. What specifically did he propose in his State of the State address?
His proposal, which actually was publicized a little bit in December ahead of session, was for a $15 blanket minimum wage for state employees, as well as a 5.5% cost of living adjustment, which they commonly refer to as a COLA. That's sort of the idea that he had and that the executive branch had to sort of compensate for these issues.
Right, right. And individually, many of the departments had, in the last couple of years, I think of corrections as one that had highlighted pay was an issue for corrections officers. So they really targeted boosting the pay to try to just recruit people to come in. So this kind of follows that same line of thought that if you can increase the pay, then recruiting is a little bit easier.
Right.
Okay. So now the other piece of that, though, is that there was a concern that if you raised some employees to $15 an hour as a minimum wage, there'd be a wage compression. So they would also be making adjustments for those near that minimum level, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we had this plan, rolled it out mid-January. Mm-hmm. The House, because it takes up the budget first, they started in a committee discussing this. So mm-hmm. kind of walk us through how the pay plan went through the House then.
I guess its first steps in early January was a public hearing where they received testimony on the proposal, and there was some back and forth between lawmakers. The plan from the governor, his initial desire for it, was to have it actually passed by the 1st of February. Hmm. That date passed, you know, before it even progressed through any sort of executive action in the committee. So last Monday, a committee substitute version was proposed in the House Budget Committee that would sort of alter the original plan pretty considerably. Instead of it being a $15 blanket minimum with the 5.5% COLA, the $15 minimum would now go to frontline agencies and workers within state government, while the remainder would be at a $12 minimum wage. The 5.5% COLA would take effect if that were higher than the respective minimum wage for those two categories. And that was sort of contentious in committee, and then when it got to the floor for debate.
So let's talk about that. What was some of the contention there? I mean, what was the arguments for and against it?
A lot of the arguments for from budget leadership was that a blanket $15 minimum would potentially provide what they stated was an unfair advantage over the private sector. Mm. And the proponents of the original plan noted that a lot of private sector jobs start you above the minimum wage anyway. The statewide minimum for all jobs would be $12 an hour come next January. So the argument was that it didn't really create much of an impact at all for the lower level jobs of state government, because they would essentially just be at that minimum wage a few months ahead of when it would start.
Mm-hmm.
So
let's back up for a second. The frontline agencies, kind of give me an idea of who those would be.
That would be departments and workers that work directly with individuals, be it through healthcare. A big example was veterans home care workers and Department of Mental Health, just sort of anyone that has that kind of interaction with the public.
Okay. And so what are some areas that are in the other camp that would receive the $12 an hour?
A big part of state government that would be at that $12 minimum is the judicial branch and workers in that category, which several lawmakers from the Kansas City area noted that the Jackson County Courthouse had a very high vacancy rate before this was even unveiled. And they stated that after it had changed in committee, that actually increased by like 20%, because they said that a lot of people had reached out to them saying that they had remained in those positions, assuming that that increase would actually come and benefit them. So I think that's one of the more prominent examples and areas where that $12 minimum would take effect.
Yeah. So let's think about that for just a moment. I mean, we won't make our listeners get their calculators out there, but what's the difference in a difference of a annual wage if you're making $12 an hour versus $15 an hour?
That difference would be around $25,000 a year for the $12 minimum and around $31,000 for the $15.
So from a personal standpoint, that's a substantial little increase there, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, when you mentioned the Jackson County clerks, or I'm presuming they're clerks, that's a sizable difference in pay. So clearly you understand why that would cause them pause. So, mm-hmm. So what were the arguments for that you heard at the testimony level regarding why state workers deserve $15 an hour?
A lot of the testimony came specifically from lawmakers, but one person that sort of stood out to me actually from the executive branch was Lieutenant Governor Mike Kehoe, who was asked about it. And he's a local. He's been around here quite a bit, you know, in his role as a lawmaker and executive and outside of that. And he noted that he has been in, you know, local grocery stores, and he has seen state workers pay for their food using food stamps. And he noted that he's not big on taxes, he's not big on spending money to address an issue of that nature, but he said that was, paraphrasing, kind of unacceptable for the people that run the state.
Yeah. I mean, that quote in your story, which we will make sure to put that link in our show notes with this, but it was very telling. I mean, Kehoe's been in this area for a couple decades, and as a small business owner, state senator, lieutenant governor, he is very much a conservative legislator, and it was very telling his comment there as to what he has seen at the grocery store line. So let's hear what Lieutenant Governor Kehoe had to say in the committee.
I have a unique outlook on that. When you live in this area, and you get behind a state employee at the grocery store who uses their food stamp card, you understand that we need to figure something out there. And I'm a conservative. I think you probably know that. Small business guy. I hate taxes. I hate throwing money at things just to solve problems. But our state employees need to have an adjustment, and that's my opinion.
Another one that jumped out at me was Rudy Veit had made some comments about $15 an hour.
Yeah, so Representative Veit actually voted in favor of an amendment that hit the floor during the perfection process last Wednesday that would have reinstated the governor's original plan. And he was one of the few Republicans to vote in that direction. He told me, and this is the kind of quote that I've heard from Kehoe, from other lawmakers, even I've seen a quote from the governor that says roughly the same thing. He didn't know a state worker that was worth less than $15 an hour. And he noted that, you know, voting for that amendment was sort of unpopular as far as the way that his party kind of ended up on the vote. But he said it was just something that he felt that he had to fight for.
So let's hear what Representative Veit had to say on the House floor.
in a budget of our size is not that significant, but for those people that are making $12 and $15, that's real money. Also, the governor gave a direction that this is the $15 an hour was what he thought it should be. And as Lieutenant Governor Kehoe said, we're in the community, we see this. These people, I don't know anybody working for a state that isn't worth $15 an hour.
It made it through the committee. It went to the House floor. There was debate there on it, similar type debates from some of the same voices. And then it passed the House, correct?
Yes.
Kind of talk a little bit about the vote on that. There were votes present versus yes and no. So kind of walk through what that all means.
Besides Veet, a lot of the discussion on the floor came from Democrats who were in support. A lot of them noted that it was sort of rare to be on the side of the governor when it comes to anything, but especially in the budget, regarding the original state pay plan. And a lot of them voted present instead of for the bill when it came to perfection and third reading and passage. Sort of as a neutral stance, the vote didn't count against the bill, but not for it. It was sort of an on-the-fence vote, I would say. They definitely, from what they said on the floor, were definitely in support of an increase, preferably the governor's version. But a lot of them said they couldn't in good conscience actually vote for what was before them.
So from there, it was sent to the Senate. And so what happens now at the Senate?
On the Senate level, it'll go through the same process, going through a committee and then the floor for perfection and amendments, and then a third reading and passage. And if it's changed there, then it bounces back to the House for their final consideration.
So what's the prospects for it in the Senate?
From what I understand, there haven't been a ton of discussions on these changes. It's important to note that all of these sort of took place between a week-long deadlock in the Senate over redistricting, and the Senator Mike Bernskeder, who represents the area, is also the handler of that redistricting bill. So he's had his hands tied quite a bit over the past week since all this has happened. But I spoke to him about it, and he said that he would fight for that original plan. He would be working with the Appropriations Committee, which is the Budget Committee's sort of counterpart in the Senate, and that is something that he would be advocating for when it does eventually make it to that step in the process.
Yeah, and I find it interesting just the backgrounds of these legislators. For instance, Senator Bernskeder, small businessman here in central Missouri, and he too drew upon his experience as a small businessman and but seeing the worth of a salary increase for state employees.
Yes.
And I will say also just historically, he, previous to being in the Senate, he was in the State House where he was instrumental in some of the pay studies that really tried to gauge how competitive state employee pay was compared to other states. So he certainly is no stranger to this topic.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, it will go to a Senate committee, as you mentioned, and we'll start that discussion again. There was another issue that came up that also kind of directly affects state workers. And let me just preface this by saying, we're focusing a lot on state workers. And why is that, Cameron? Every one of your stories mentioned this, and it always floors me. How big of an impact does the state workforce have on the mid-Missouri workforce?
Yeah, the state government is definitely in the Jefferson City area by far the largest employer with around 14,000 state employees calling the area home.
So in a city of 40, 50,000, I mean, that's a sizable chunk. I mean, obviously many of them live outside the proper city limits, but it's a big footprint. And quite honestly, that's one of Cameron's specialties here, is focusing on issues that directly affect state employees. As a business reporter, that's one of his charges here. And, you know, so you'll have seen, or we'll see in the future, his stories on the pension plans, the benefits. And then there's another piece of legislation a local legislator has really pushed that directly will affect everyone who works for the state government, that regards how often they get paid. So kind of walk us through that legislation.
That is a bill from Representative Dave Griffith, local lawmaker. That bill would allow state employees to be paid biweekly rather than just on the 1st and 16th of each month, which would create two additional pay periods for the year, for most years. His perspective on it has been that would kind of help state employees to budget and be able to respond to any sort of bigger expenses that sort of occur between pay periods and just have a little bit more flexibility in that.
Okay. So what kind of reception has that received at the in the House?
So that has passed out of committee. I believe it was unanimous. Has yet to reach the floor, but it has received support. It's something that's come up in prior sessions sponsored by both Republicans and Democrats, but it's never, I guess, progressed that far from either side. His viewpoint is this sort of paired with this increased focus on state employees and quality of life, that this might have a better shot of progressing in tandem with that pay increase this session.
Well, very good, Cameron. I would encourage listeners to certainly watch for Cameron's stories on state government as an employer, and certainly he's open to ideas. If there are issues that you'd like for him to tackle, you can certainly give him an email. His email is cgerber@newstribune.com. Cameron, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.